All right, folks. Welcome back. Another episode of Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. We have a very special guest here, Bloodsport MMA. Make yourself known to the public.
What's up, you guys? Pleasure to be here on the TKO Podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be exciting, man. Bloodsport's been an MMA content creator for a couple of years now. He does a lot of good work out in Switzerland, so we're very happy to have him on the pod. With me, as always, as well as my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
And today we are going to break down UFC 298, the big one. Very excited for this card. We've had a steady diet of very okay cards these last couple weeks with middleweight main events leading us out through 2024. So I'm excited to get some five-round top-level featherweights in the mix instead. As always, we'll go through the card in reverse chronological order, starting with the main event and then working our way down. And at the end, we'll put everything together in a nice little betting slip for you guys to make things concise. But yeah, let's break down this main event, guys. We've been waiting for a few months now, you know. Ilya Topuria, the Georgian-Spanish contender, 26 years old, I believe, maybe 27, fighting Alexander.
3 weeks and 6 days.
All right, there you go. So he's a young man in the sport. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Topuria as well. So I'm really excited for this opportunity for him. He's fighting the consensus greatest featherweight of all time in Alexander Volkanovski. Longtime champion, very well-rounded fighter. We know him well. Starting to get up there in age, but we'll see if he can turn back the clocks a little bit and show us that he still has it. Who do you guys got in this fight? Bloodsport, what do you think about this matchup?
I have to be honest, my opinion is not that popular, I know, but I honestly think now is the time for El Matador, Ilya Topuria, to take over. I really believe everything that plays a factor, the age, obviously there's a stat that people from like 125 to 170, I think, over 35 in 33 title fights, only like two have been won from the older guy and stuff. And Ilya with the confidence reminds me of Conor back in the day when Conor came up in the featherweight division. And I really believe Ilya can seal the deal.
Yeah, man, I tend to agree. Jordan's not going to like to hear it, but I'm a huge believer in Topuria as well. I've been watching him since his debut in the UFC, and seeing him put the pieces together in his game and end up where he's at right now has been very gratifying, you know. And I do think it's his time. I think you're right. Volkanovski is a great champion. He's a great fighter, you know, one of the best in the sport, and probably one of my favorite fighters to watch technique wise. But I just feel like the skill set in Topuria, the timing coming off the knockout loss over Makhachev, the age factor, like you mentioned, the confidence from Ilya, I think it's all the cards are in his favor. And I think he's going to turn them in for a big payday on Saturday night, probably finishing Volkanovski. What do you think, Jordan? Who you got?
I'm still not conceding that it's going to happen. But, with the recency of that KO, I wish it was another month or two. You know, I wish he would have saved and waited and fought on UFC 300 or something like that. I think it's still probably a little bit too early for him to come back to this fight. I can see how you think that Ilya is going to put him away, but I just don't think that I don't think he's on Volk's level yet. I could be, you know, we could be here next week and talking about, you know, a very Conor-like-esque knockout of Aldo, you know, and be like, oh shit, he was the real deal the entire time. Yeah. But I think we might end up finding out that Ilya is very good, but, you know, Volk is just a little bit better. I think we see him retire I think we see him move away from the featherweight division after he puts Ilya away, though. I do think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think either way that this fight shakes out, I expect Topuria to get the belt by the end of 2024, start 2025 as the champion. I think if Volkanovski does beat him, I think you're right, maybe he goes back up to lightweight, or he can even retire. He has nothing more to prove. If he turns back Topuria, it's going to feel like one of those title fights where, you know, like Stipe versus Ngannou 1, where you're like, okay, like this guy beat the old guard. He beat the new guard, and now he's beating even the next generation. Like, Stipe could have retired after that Ngannou fight, and we would have been calling him the greatest heavyweight fighter of all time, you know, without much argument. You could argue for Fedor, but...
I'm a big Kane supporter. A little bit biased.
I get that, too. I just feel like the injuries... You know, for me, Kane and Khabib are kind of, like, on the same level, where I'm like, this guy was better than everybody, but he didn't have the resume... to back up those to back up the skills, you know. Makes sense. It's funny that they're in the same gym too. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, so all right, let's get into a little bit more of the technical analysis for this fight. So if you know for the fan that's not aware of either fighter, Volkanovski has a great jab, some of the best striking that we've seen in the sport. Very well rounded everywhere, great wrestling, great top game. We saw him have some, for the first time really get tested in his bottom game against, Makhachev, who's, you know, the best in the world on the ground right now. And
don't forget Ortega, bro.
Yeah. Ortega as well. Ortega tested that defense for sure. And you know, he did well in those situations. He didn't get submitted. He got very close to getting submitted against Ortega. And against Makhachev, he was put in some really rough positions and was able to, you know, fight out of them or at least survive until the bell. So, you know, we have a super well-rounded champion in Volkanovski and a great example for the sport. Awesome cardio as well, which I think is probably the X factor in this fight. And he's taking on Ilya Topuria. Bloodsport, you want to give us a little breakdown of Topuria's game?
Of course. What I definitely have seen, it's a small detail if we go into the heavy detail part, is Volk's game is based around his feints. If you see Volk, he's always feigning his way in. He's never just standing there without setting up punches. And if you watch Ilya's fights against Emmet is a great example because Emmet is such a power puncher, right?
Yeah.
And if you would be afraid of a feint, it must be of Emmet because we've seen what he did to Bryce Mitchell.
Yeah.
And in the fight, you really see every time Emmet feints, Topuria just stands there because he's so confident in his head movement, in his defense, in the striking defense, in his counter ability, that he's not really biting on the feints. And if you don't bite on the feints, then your feints are not as useful as they should be. You know what I mean? The feints are there to get reads from you. And I think that could really be a factor. And what, in my opinion, what's definitely a fact is they are both as well-rounded as it gets. I mean, Volk, next to Makhachev, probably the most well-rounded fighter, maybe Arman Tsarukyan in the whole UFC. But Ilya Topuria has been Greco-Roman wrestling since he's a little child. He's been training jiu-jitsu since he's a young teenager. His boxing is top-notch. And I really do believe that both can give each other problems everywhere. Volk is more of a ground-and-pound guy who takes you down to finish you like he did against Yair, while Topuria likes to smother his way into a favorable position to then submit you, which obviously we have seen Volk. The fire hydrant build is hard to submit, but the fact is everyone can be submitted. There's no person on this earth that can't be submitted. It doesn't matter how small your neck is. You still have arms, legs, and everything. And Ilya is great with submissions from his back. He has, I think, 8 submission wins, and most of them are like triangles and stuff from his back.
Yeah, a couple guillotines in there, takes too. Him down,
yes, exactly. So I think this will be so competitive and such a fun fight for his fans.
Yeah, man.
You think he can get submitted? You think he can submit Volk? He hasn't been submitted. He didn't get submitted by Ortega or Islam.
Yeah, but I mean,
you go. Anything could happen. You saying?
I think anything can happen, and I think Topuria is more dangerous on the feet. I mean, obviously Makhachev knocked him out, so he's very dangerous. But I think Topuria is more dangerous on the feet than either Makhachev or Ortega. And I think a club and sub might be something that we see. Where
so with the Islam fight, it's so hard for me to look at the technical part of it because with him revealing, and I know he's not using this as an excuse, but he's like, oh, I was drinking pretty much every day until I got the call. It's like, okay, well, that lets me know. I wish you would have told me that before I laid a little bit of money down on you. I might have, like, I would have put in like the heart. You know, I'd be like, yeah, I'm betting on you right here, but I would have kept my cash out of that one. But
yeah, I think, you know, even if we use, I think the first fight is a much better example of both guys' skill sets, right? And because of the short notice, because the X factor of Volkanovski,
if the Volk from that first fight shows up, I think he beats Ilya. I think if any version less than that shows up, I think we would do see a new featherweight champion. I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean that's where the interesting thing is though, because it's not going to be the same guy as the first Islam fight because he's coming off a knockout loss, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
So you've got to think that it affects everybody. It has to affect the best fighter in the world or, you know, one of the best fighters in the world in Volkanovski. Hey,
GSP got knocked out by Matt Serra and came back and was GSP.
Yeah, but he took like a year off, right? I think he took some good time off after that fight.
That is a good point.
So, I mean, it's I don't know. I'm worried about Volkanovski, and I hope that the decision to take this fight on short notice doesn't lead to him getting finished like that. But I think either way, even if he came on his best night, I think Topuria is a very, very hungry contender and has a great chance of beating Volkanovski in any facet.
Definitely. And to your point, Jordan, you said that Brian Ortega, for example, and he has never been submitted before. First of all, he's never been knocked out before until he fought Islam.
That's true.
And normally, drinking every day definitely affects you, but that normally affects your cardio more than your blocking ability, which was the case for the loss. And in the Ortega fight, the submissions, I can't be 100% sure here, but I think round four it was or something. So you're all slippery. Ortega was looking like a zombie in there. So you never know. You never know. But he definitely has amazing grappling defense. I mean, working with Craig Jones is a cheat code.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you got to think that that camp helped him a lot in the Islam fight, you know, training for Islam and stuff. And I think that's why he showed off that wrestling, or maybe not why he showed off the wrestling, but why he was able to have so much great success with that wrestling against Yair in that fight between the two Islam fights. Yair, obviously, you know, when you're breaking him down, that's his weakest path of, you know, the path of least resistance is to take him down, put him on his back. I can't really say the same for Topuria, though. You know, Topuria is good on his back, like we said, and he's a scrambler and he hits really hard. So I think if Volkanovski does get it done here, I think it's going to look like a lot of leg kicks, a lot of movement on the outside. Like you said, Bloodsport, Topuria does not bite on the feints at all. I think that's a great read. In that Emmett fight, you see him, like, Emmett's jab comes within inches of Topuria's face and he barely moves back just enough to not get hit and hit him back. And Volkanovski uses that jab a lot and uses the feints to set it up. So I think Topuria might be able to catch a counter over the top of the jab with that right cross that he loves so much over the top, or that hook. But I think it can also lead to Volkanovski landing a lot of leg kicks because Topuria is a little heavy on that lead leg. And I think if Volkanovski, you know, I expect him to do good research for this fight and to be well trained. And I think that's going to be a big factor for him is that lead leg kick. We'll see how it happens.
Definitely, that's how Volk got Holloway out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I
mean? So Volk is phenomenal in that. And as you mentioned, Topuria has a very low boxing stance. So that definitely affects you. And we saw the exact happening in the Joe Pfeiffer Hermansson fight. Hermansson, an old guy. Old.
Yeah.
Pfeiffer, the young up-and-coming killer, he got killed with leg kicks.
Yeah, leg kicks and cardio, which is two of, you know, Volkanovski's greatest tools in the octagon. So, true. I mean, Volkanovski certainly has the tools to beat Topuria, you know, but what concerns me is the timing and the age and Topuria's hunger, you know. So I'm really excited for this fight. Let's make a quick prediction, though. Who you guys got? I think we can all figure it out from the analysis.
I would not be surprised to see Topuria win, but I'm still going to be riding with Volk. I think he gets it done. I think he'll get it done by decision. I don't think that we'll see a finish in this one. Maybe even a controversial split decision, if you will.
Mm. Bloodsport?
You were saying?
I think it's going to be Volk by decision. I think it's going to be Volk by decision. Who do you think is going to win in this one?
I'm going to go with Topuria by finish. I think second or third. That's what I'm thinking.
I did a prediction video. I don't remember what exactly which round I thought. I think I said round 3 TKO. I think he knocks him down with something and then finishes him with ground and pound shots. And I can give you the stats from Tapology. That's my favorite site that I work with.
It's a great
with,
site, yeah.
Kind of. And 41% got Topuria winning and 59% got Volkanovski winning.
So very close, very split on the fans' decisions. And, you know, I'd be very surprised if we've seen Volkanovski have such a small margin for victory in the fans' eyes since like the Makhachev fights, you know. He's probably been like 70 plus on every other fight that he's had. So you can tell that, you know, the fan base is definitely, you know, not sure where to put their money for this fight. And the odds makers have it so they have it around a pick 'em right now. I think they opened up with Topuria as a slight underdog at like plus 140. But now it's muddled down to about a pick 'em.
It's because like Volk's like your boy, man. Like he's like that dude that you could feasibly run into the bar and just be like, "Are we best friends now?" And he'd be like, "Yeah, we are."
Be like, "Yeah, mate, definitely."
Yeah, let's go get a tomahawk, like something like that. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
That's did you guys see that video he put out?
Oh
with
my
the
god,
old
yes. That's
thing?
Why I love him. Like the whole, yeah, that like so that's ex- that's why I love him, you know?
That was phenomenal.
That was amazing. To improve the odds, it's minus 110 for both.
Yeah, exactly.
Both the same odds.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you know, we're split on the pick. We'll go 2 for Ilya, 1 for Volkanovski. But I think we wouldn't be surprised either way because we all know how high level these guys are, you know. And
I'll tell you what I am surprised. Fucking Paulo Costa is finally fighting.
I don't believe it.
I'm still not sure.
He's in LA. He's in Anaheim though. He's there at least.
All right. Hell yeah. I mean, I'll be surprised, you know, if he actually makes it to the cage. You know, he might just weigh in at 205 and be like, so what? Tough shit, you know? But we'll see what happens. Let's break down the fight like it is going to happen, though. Who you got in this one, Bloodsport?
I have to say, I know this is also not a popular opinion, but I'm a huge Paulo Costa fan since the beginning of his career. I disagree with a lot of things they did recently with all the weight misses and pullouts and whatever, even though the staph infection pullout was... Clearly
yeah, that was
not,
legit.
Not his
yeah.
fault. Yeah, of course. I mean, you saw the hole in his elbow.
Yeah.
But I'm also, like, I think every MMA fan, or barely everyone, lost Bobby Knuckles.
Yeah.
The Reaper of Whitaker. So it's just such a tough fight for me to predict because I have to be honest, in every pick that I do, especially if I like someone so much, of course your bias affects you a little bit, even though I try to leave that out of the way. But if I pick it completely unbiased, I have to say, look, Whitaker has been on such a streak. Well, he lost to Adesanya by the close decision that I think was very, very thin.
Yeah.
And then he got finished by DDP, who somehow just can win every fight, and we don't know how he wins a fight. But anyways, he's 33 years old. He's not like past his prime or something. He's hungry. He's ready. He's been preparing forever. He signed the contract way before Paulo Costa signed it, so he definitely has been preparing. And I don't know, it's just definitely the safer bet to go Whitaker by decision. Paulo Costa always seems that he has no cardio, but he actually has good cardio. He just always looks tired in a way. He definitely has the power to put Whitaker out of there. If we see the Paulo that fought Romero, I think he gets Whitaker out of there. But he just, if I believe his Instagram story, he just arrived, I think, yesterday night or something, Monday night from Brazil to Anaheim. Like, I just don't like that. I'm never sure Paulo if he's fully dialed in or not. And I don't want to risk anything with my pick. They are such an amazing stylistic matchup, but I have to go Whitaker by decision.
I want to see how Robert Whitaker is able to rebound from that knockout, because I think he still has a lot to prove. I think he can make maybe one more good run at the belt. So this will do a lot to kind of confirm you know, a lot of beliefs what I have around Robert Whitaker's future as a contender.
Definitely, definitely.
I agree. I think Whitaker can get it done by decision. It makes sense to me. I think Paulo Costa is very hard to put away. He seems to be made out of brick or iron or something similar to that. I don't know if he has the skill set really to beat Whitaker, at least from what we've seen from him. He does have great power, but you know, even though he has good power and he, you know, looks so muscly and beefy, he really tends to win more of his fights on attritive damage than like one shot knockouts. You know, you look at like the Paulo Costa fight. You look at, you know, some of his fights earlier in his career, some of those knockouts that he's had in the UFC. It wasn't like he just landed this huge punch out of nowhere and slept the guy. You know, it was more like he broke them down with body shots and, you know, pressure and things like that. Things that Whitaker is really not that susceptible to. Whitaker has great movement. He's very tough, as we've seen him, you know, prove over and over throughout his career. I think the DDP fight was a bit of a slip up, and DDP is kind of a tough matchup for him. Yeah, I expect Whitaker to use the movement. I expect him to use the jab, use the leg kicks, and win a decision victory there, probably relatively easy. You know, and if he can mix in the wrestling, even better for him. Costa's been tough to take down in his career, but you know, Whitaker has great timing on his takedowns, and I think that might be a difference maker for sure. Costa seems to be a little bit not slow to react on the feet, but not as fast as Whitaker is, you know?
Yeah, the only thing I did not like that just came to mind from Whitaker in the pre-fight media thing, not from this week, from 2 weeks ago, I believe. He just had a newborn baby, sat on Ariel Helwani's show, the MMA Hour, and he said he literally goes from the hospital to the training room back to the hospital. because the newborn baby, and he's sad how tough it is, because Whitaker just has his heart on his tongue. He said how hard it is to train like that, and he says because he's so mad from the DDP fight, he's training himself to death. And I'm just not a fan of hearing something like that, because overtraining is a real thing, and I just have a little bit of worries. Well, not worries. I'm not worried because I like Paulo Costa so much. I would have no problem with Paulo winning. Fair. But I don't know how fit Whitaker really is, but we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a factor. You got to look at the fighters' lives around the fight, too, because at the end of the day, it is just them in there, you know? So if something can be mentally occupying you, like not getting enough sleep or taking care of your baby, or, you know, on the other hand, it could be something that motivates him, you know? Like Charles Oliveira said something like, you know, after I had my daughter, that's when I trained to become a champion instead of just becoming a fighter, you know?
I mean, and, hey, Mackenzie Dern beat the hell out of Angela Hill after, while she was going through a divorce.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. So I think, you know, Whitaker might be coming into this fight with something to prove, coming off of the loss, first knockout loss he's had in a while. You know, Paulo Costa pulling out of the fight so many times. I'm sure Whitaker's frustrated. These could be things that play against him, or it could be playing for him, you know? So I'm excited for the fight either way, but I do think that if we take out all the extraneous factors, Whitaker's skill set is enough to beat Paulo's skill set, and I think we'll see it happen. But yeah, let's go down the card. There's a lot of other really good fights on this card. We got Jeff Neal versus Ian Machado Gary, and what looks to be like Machado's or Gary's first, you know, foray into the top five, really. Who do you guys think about this?
I think Team Shootbox wins, who is looking after his wife while they fight. No, I'm joking. I had to get a cock joke in there. No, but with all the stuff outside the octagon aside, Mr. Machado trains at an amazing gym with Shootbox, even though there might be a language barrier. It's an amazing gym that definitely can prepare him perfectly for a fight like that, for a world-class fight. And Jeff Neal, yeah, he comes off a loss against Shafkat, but if you really rewatch that fight, I mean, he was giving Shafkat a run for his money. I mean, I a few times thought, like, how is Shafkat staying in there? Jeff Neal has phenomenal boxing, amazing power, put Luque out of there for the first time in Luque's career, as far as I remember, flat down to the face.
Yeah,
and
man.
Gary's strength of schedule is just not impressing me. Neal Magny on like a few days' notice couldn't finish him, however he couldn't finish him. D-Rod, Kenan Song, Gabe Green, Darian Weeks, it's not impressing me. And it could be something like we saw against Hermansson with Joe Pfeiffer, where just sometimes you have to go step by step instead of going three steps ahead. But Gary definitely has the confidence and the skill set to beat most of the guys in the world. But I'm going to let my hate talk in this, and I say Jeff Neal gets him out of there in the second round.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth on this fight myself. I love that you brought up Ian Gary's strength of schedule, because Jeff Neal has one of the toughest strength of schedules in the welterweight division. You know, he fought everybody that Gary's fought that's worth his spit, i.e. Neal Magny. But he also beat up, you know, Vicente Luque. He had that very close fight with Shafkat, Santiago Ponzinibbio, Mike Perry, Nico Price, Wonder Boy. You know, he's fought high-level guys, and he's fought a lot of them in striking matches, you know? And you got to imagine that that's what Gary's going to be bringing to the table, is the striking, you know? We saw Jeff Neal have a lot of trouble against somebody that moves very well and, you know, strikes very quickly in Stephen Thompson. He frustrated him a lot in that fight. Thompson was definitely a step ahead of Neal in that fight. I'm not saying that Ian Gary is Stephen Thompson, but I think he can replicate a pretty similar game plan, using the movement, using the kicks, using, you know, poking and prodding techniques to keep Jeff Neal at bay. But that being said, Ian Gary is not Stephen Thompson. He hasn't fought that level of competition. He never fought Tyron Woodley. He never fought, you know, Johnny Hendricks and all these great people that Thompson fought before he fought Jeff Neal. So I don't know, man. I'm still going back and forth on it in my mind. I want Jeff Neal to win. I don't like Ian Gary. I usually bet against him. But I have to admit, he is a very good fighter. And more than anything, he's a very smart fighter. So I expect him to use that fight IQ, study the tape well, and see that Jeff Jeff Neal hates leg kicks and doesn't check leg kicks. He doesn't really shoot for anything besides the head as well. And Gary has good head movement. So unless Neal can back him into a corner and, you know, unload on him, I think it's going to be Gary's fight. I think Gary's going to be able to use that movement. I think he's going to use the leg kicks. He's going to use the jab. I don't think he'll be able to finish Jeff Neal because Jeff Neal is shown to be very tough. But I think Gary's probably going to win by decision in a fight that frustrates me to hell.
I know you hate saying that.
Yeah. I don't like Jeff Neal. I mean, I don't like Ian Gary, and I love Jeff Neal. I want Jeff Neal to win, but I just feel like Gary has a great skill set to frustrate Jeff Neal. And although I don't think Gary's going to necessarily see gold on this particular run, he might see it eventually. I think that this is a favorable matchup to get him into the top five. And I expect him to get it done. It might not be easy, but I think he'll be able to get it done.
I got to side with Bloodsport. I don't think Gary's ready for this competition yet. I think Neil's going to prove to be too much for him.
Yeah, no, I want that to happen, but I don't know. I just feel like the stage they set up, I might be eating crow like I did last week. But you know what? This is a 3-round fight. It's not 5 rounds. I don't think the and if it was, I feel like the cardio.
That is true.
Yeah. The cardio was
an interesting fact is that I see right now Jeff Neal actually has the longer reach than Gary. Because I thought Gary, that could be a favor of him, keeping him distant with the jab and stuff. Even though I'm never the biggest fan of the reach measurements, because depending on how wide your shoulders are, what your build is, the reach can vary. And as you said, he's taller than him by 11 centimeters or 4 inches, I believe, for you Americans.
Yeah,
and he definitely has the age advantage as well. 26 years old, 3 months, and he's the minus -245 betting favorite. So the odds maker definitely thinks.
Wow, 245? Jeez. Oof. I mean, I don't know. I got to see what it is on him by decision, because I think that's the more likely outcome, that he gets it done by decision rather than KO. But at those odds, I kind of like Jeff Neal. You know, I might throw a little 10 spot on him at the plus 200 odd. But, you know, we'll see. I think either way, it's going to be an exciting fight, and I expect it to stay on the feet for the most part. I just, you know, I feel like Neal tends to have trouble with guys that are more elusive, like Thompson, and to a lower extent, who was it that he fought earlier? Neil Magny. To a lower extent, Neil Magny, who's also you know, relatively elusive to hit on the feet. He was able to have a lot of success against Shavkat, like we talked about, but Shavkat's biggest, my biggest gripe with Shavkat is his lack of head movement. He tends to just kind of keep his head in one spot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, 63% go with Mr. Machado and 37% go with Neal. So, and with the 37%, I would not be surprised if there are just some people just hate Gary. And
yeah, 100%. Like, there's definitely hate votes.
The hate
there.
Is real.
Yeah.
Did you watch the comments under the first embedded episode? I was dying.
No, I actually didn't see that embedded yet.
I laughed my ass off. Because embedded was like 35% just Ian Gary footage of him and his wife the whole time, and the whole shootbox team, like 20 men, and just him and his wife. The comments were hilarious.
I gotta check it out. Didn't he pull out of a fight like a month ago? Wasn't that like a month ago that he was supposed to fight?
I was there in Vegas actually against Vincente Luque with pneumonia or whatever it's called.
Yeah, pneumonia. It's like, what? So, I mean, like, I don't know. Does he have – that's not a huge training camp to train for Jeff Neal, you know? And Jeff Neal's – you know, maybe he doesn't have the most deep bag of tricks, but he's a tough customer for sure, you know? I don't know.
And hits hard. Interesting. And Gary has been cracked before. I think in his first or second UFC fight, he got wobbled.
Yeah, against Song Kanan, I think. But yeah, so I mean, we could see Jeff Neal have some success here. They're at the big cage, which I think does play into Gary's game a bit. You know, with that movement and everything being his primary path to victory, I feel. But yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about it enough. You guys are picking Neal, I'm picking Gary. We'll see how it goes. There's a lot of great fights we got to get through here. We got Marab Dabalashvili.
I wish this was a 5-rounder right here.
Yeah, dude. I want to say
the same.
Yeah. But,
that's,
you know,
a phenomenal fight.
I would love for it to be a 5-round fight too, but I know this is the kind of fight they put right on the fucking Apex card that has no crowd. So I'd rather see the crowd and, you know, let the winner of this fight get some shine. So I'm really excited for this one. Marab Dabalashvili versus Henry Cejudo at bantamweight. For what is, in all intents and purposes, a number one contender fight. I feel like any fight with Marab is a number one contender fight right now. The guy's, you know, he should be getting that title. If he's not getting it after this, we will riot.
You will riot. I will not riot. Yeah. I would rather see Sandhagen or something, to be honest.
That'd be
I'm
nice,
a big Sugar Sean O'Malley fan, so, and I think Merab is one of the toughest puzzles to fix for him. So,
yeah.
But I like Merab. I like Merab.
I like Merab too, but I agree. He is a tough fight for O'Malley, which is why I want to see him get in there, though, you know? I like seeing the best fight the best. And I do feel like O'Malley would have a lot of success against Merab, because we'll break that fight down when it happens, though. But yeah, so we got Merab versus Cejudo here. Cejudo, the aging vet, great wrestler, as we know. I think, you know, you guys might have heard he has an Olympic gold medal in his chest.
Has he ever mentioned that, really?
Yeah, he hasn't mentioned it.
Triple C, they call him, you know. So the guy's had a lot of success in his career. He's obviously fought the top level of the sport, Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw. The list goes on and on. You know, Mal Marias, Dominic Cruz. He's fought a lot of great names in the sport. But he draws the young Energizer Bunny in Merab Dvalishvili, who will not stop. We saw him put on an all-time great ass-kicking against Piotr Jan in his last time out. And I do think that he's going to have some of that same success here against Cejudo. I just feel like Merab has such a overwhelming and smothering game. And even if you're able to stop the takedowns, which I expect Cejudo to be able to stop the takedowns, he's, like we said, an Olympic wrestler.
Well, I mean, can he, though? I mean, he had some trouble with Aljamain Sterling, and, you know, they're training partners, and Merab has a more, you know, control-based one anyway. I'm not completely sure that Cejudo will be able to completely neutralize that takedown game.
I think I was talking to one of my friends about this recently. The difference between Merab and Aljo's wrestling game. I think Aljo, when he goes for a takedown, he does it with a lot more intent than Merab. Merab is going to just throw takedowns to keep you busy, you know? And so he might defend 20, 30 takedowns against Merab. Like, Merab is going to shoot 20 or 30 times. But if he gets taken down once, it's just going to be exhausting. You know, just the fight that Merab fights is exhausting. It weighs down the clock. And Sterling did get a couple takedowns on Cejudo, but he wasn't able to have much control there when he did. So even if Merab does get a takedown, I don't expect him to stay on top.
You got to remember too, I think we were talking something about this, but it's almost like, so if Merab takes down Henry Cejudo, it's, oh my God, Merab just took down an Olympic champion. You know,
yeah.
So it kind of plays into the, I think it can play into the judges' minds, and the, yeah. To nobody's fault, but Henry Cejudo, who, you know, openly says I'm an Olympic champion, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that can play a little bit of factor into it. I'm curious to see how much success Cejudo will have, you know, on the feet, if he's able to get off some of his combinations or some of his boxing on the feet in between Merab relentlessly throwing his body at him.
Yeah, because that's what he's going to do. He's going to chuck his body at him like a bag of bricks, and he's going to be like, well, you're going to be able to catch it? You're going to be able to catch it, you know? I don't know. I just think Cejudo is a little too low activity, and I think Merab's going to drown him. What do you think, Bloodsport?
About this fight, I could probably go on for an hour or something. It's such an amazing fight. I've been asking for that fight since Henry announced his return. It's absolutely stylistic masterpiece. I'll be on my feet watching this fight. The thing is, just look. Henry Cejudo is an Olympic wrestler, yes. But what is Olympic wrestling? It's you are on a mat, you both are in a wrestling stance, and you try to take each other down. I was never the biggest fan of Henry Cejudo's MMA wrestling. He has great wrestling, but, I mean, Aljamain Sterling was a Division II All-American, which is amazing, but it's not the top, top, top level of the country, while he's an Olympic gold medalist, which is you can't get any higher.
Yeah.
And Aljamain, in my opinion, fought much better in the wrestling department against Henry than Henry against Aljamain on the other side. And this offensive wrestling is not as impressive, and Merab is a guy, he just will not stop. You saw it against Piotr Jan. I mean, he will not. Aljamain is more the guy who shoots for a single, like against O'Malley, and once he sees he can't get it, he can't get it, he will dislocate. And disengage, goddammit. Exactly. And Merab will chain wrestle, like Hamza Chimaev does in a way.
Yeah.
He will not stop until he has you on the ground. And on the ground, he will smother you with ground and pound. Aljamain is more looking for position advantages to get a submission and stuff. And Merab will just smother you like he did Marlon Moraes. I mean, he beat the crap out of Moraes on the ground. And he's 33 years old, even though I still don't believe that. I believe Merab, when he came to the US, he faked the passport. If you see videos of him when he came to the US, he looked like 40.
Yeah.
And now he's out of nowhere 33. Yeah. I don't believe that. But he's younger, he's fresher. Hendrich is fired, his wrestling coach since the since the Olympic team, Captain Eric Albarracin or whatever his name is.
Yeah, I saw that.
Shortest guy on the planet. I've seen him in Abu Dhabi, shortest guy on the planet. But still an amazing coach, and I'm just not a fan of stuff like that. That does not give me a good look on your mindset, and I believe Henry knows if he loses that, it's over for him. So I don't like that whole mindset around it, and I do believe Merab will just smother him for 3 rounds and win a decision.
Yeah, I expect the same. I think Merab by decision is the safe bet. I think Cejudo, you know, like, Prime versus Prime would have some great success against Merab, but I just don't see that at this stage of their careers. Cejudo was talking about retiring after he lost to Sterling, so I kind of feel like he's 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and you really don't want to have that kind of mindset when you're fighting somebody as dogged as Merab is, you know? Merab's never going to stop moving, and I expect him to have a lot of success against Cejudo. And, you know, he might not ever even look like he hurts him or is close to finishing him, but he's going to put him against the cage. He's going to overwhelm him with strikes and feints and volume and takedown attempts. And at the end of it, we're going to be tired from watching, you know?
We're going to see amazing scrambles, I believe. I don't believe it will look like the Aldo fight where he just has him in a single against the fence for 5 minutes. I think it will be amazing scrambles. And if you like jiu-jitsu wrestling, you will be in for a treat.
I agree. I think there's going to be some awesome scrambles in this fight. I mean, I'm excited for it, man. It's a banger for sure. 5 rounds would have been sick, but we'll settle for 3 at T-Mobile. Or Anaheim, rather. All right, so going down the card, a couple more really awesome matchups. I mean, we can honestly talk about everyone on this card, but rounding out the main card, they have Anthony Hernandez versus Roman Kapalov. In my opinion, a better middleweight fight than any that we've seen in these last few weeks. I'm really excited for this matchup. Both guys are kind of hardcore casual fans, you know, big fans from the hardcore casual audience, or from the hardcore audience, rather. Anthony Hernandez, on one hand, is a very a dogfighter, you know. He gets better as the fight goes on. We'll find positions and grappling advantages, grappling positions to find submissions late in the fight. If you get tired, he will drown you. He had, you know, one of the craziest victories we've ever seen against Rodolfo Vieira, getting that submission over the world jiu-jitsu champion. He had another great one that was easy to predict against Edmund Shabazian, where Shabazian looked good for a round and then got tired. And you don't want to get tired against Hernandez because he will drown you. And on the other hand, we have Roman Kapalov, who is a great striker, very slick, fighting at middleweight here. Looks like a bigger version of Chase Hooper or Ben Askren.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. He is, yeah.
But the guy is way fiercer on the feet than either of those two combined. The dude has very slick head kicks, very slick straight right hand down the pipe. He's a very clean striker. Reminds me kind of Albert Tumenov, if you guys remember Albert Tumenov from a few years ago. He fought in like 2015, 2016 UFC. He was a Russian dude. But both of them have very slick 1-2s, and more than anything, know when to throw their strikes. Like they find the spots to land them, you know. Very advantageous on the feet. Like if you give them something, they'll take it. So it's kind of an interesting fight here because both fighters do reach a summit point in the fight in that second and third round. If you look at their records, they have a lot of finishes in that second and third round. So I expect this fight to simmer up to a rolling boil. And I really don't know who to pick. Bloodsport, do you have a pick in this one?
Yeah, I have to say I'm a big supporter of Fluffy, of Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. I've been a fan of him ever since I saw that Rodolfo Vieira comeback, because the odds were insane that fight. Everyone said he has no chance, blah, blah, blah. And he submitted one of the greatest submission artists to ever join the UFC from the BJJ world. And he showed in recent fights against tough competition. He didn't fight no names. That he is the real deal. He can get hurt. I mean, even Edmund, he hurt him quite some times in the first round, and he toughened it out. Edmund was once the golden boy of the UFC. They thought he's the next big thing.
Yeah.
So he's not a choke, even though his schedule has not been too good lately with the wins and stuff, but he's still as dangerous as he gets, and Fluffy can get you out of there. You get the Marc-André Barriot out of there, who was impossible to finish before that. And I just believe Kopilov. He's coming off 4 straight knockout wins. oftentimes when you come up four straight knockout wins, you have that cockiness inside of you says, hey, I will just throw big shots, especially his head kicks were very successful lately. I will get him out of there in round one. You can fall in love with that knockout, as Bisping says. And against a guy like Fluffy, who's so hard to finish, that can really be a problem for you if you search for it too early and gas yourself out. Fluffy will drown you. He will take you down. And I believe Fluffy is the better grappler. And I do believe that Fluffy will get a third round submission against Roman Kopylov.
I think that's a great pick. I would say I could see Roman finishing this early, but if I'd say if it goes anything past the first round, we'll see Fluffy winning this one pretty handily. That's what I wanted. I like Fluffy.
And also, don't forget, his best friend and teammate, Max Payne Griffin, just fought this recent weekend. And being in camp, got a win, by the way, as well. Being in camp with your best friend and training partner is such a good thing for you than if you're going through hell alone, going through hell with your training partner, your best friend. And I do think the train of the MMA Gold Fight Team Chim continues. Last week, Max Griffin. This week, Anthony Hernandez.
I think it's a good bet, man. I think Kopylov has been finished in the third round by submission before against Carl Robertson, and he had a lot of the other loss that he has on his record against Albert Duraev. He lost from the wrestling. So I mean, Hernandez is a great wrestler, as we've seen, and more than anything, like we said earlier, he builds as the fight goes on. Both guys do, but grappling is a little bit easier to rely on, I think. I think Hernandez has been stopped by punches before against Kevin Holland, but there's really no shame in getting knocked out by Kevin Holland. And if I remember correctly, I think it was on like 1 or 2 weeks' notice.
Short notice.
So I think the smarter bet is to put it on Hernandez, but if Hernandez is not able to get that takedown early or not able to, drain the energy reserves of Kopylov, I think we could see Kopylov get another highlight reel knockout here. And if he gets another knockout, that'd be crazy because he'd be on like a 5-fight win streak of all knockouts, which is pretty hard to deny. I think whoever wins this fight should definitely get a step towards that top 10 range because, there's a lot of fighters in middleweight that are kind of sitting on their hands there. And they should be defending their spot against one of these young, hungry contenders. So I'm going to agree with you guys. I'm going to go with Fluffy, but I expect a barn burner either way.
Well, it's interesting. 61% go with Kopylov.
Really? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the casual fans, or maybe not the casual fans, but the wider audience might just see those knockouts and think like, oh, yeah, like, this guy's going to knock him out. Of course, why not? But if you've seen both guys fight, you know how much of a dog fighter Anthony is. And
I feel like sometimes that can play into the fight, though, because like if you have everybody around you, be like, this dude's just gonna walk over and just punch you in the face and knock you out, and then you'll be like, there's no fucking way he's gonna just walk over here and knock you start thinking it. And then all of a sudden, like, you get in the fight, like, what's that one, I forget who it is, like, he literally just walks over and just like, well, hit people one time and be like, all right, go to sleep.
Oh, you're talking about a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Where it's like, you can't play that shit out. But, that was the game plan, and it worked.
Yeah. The odds have Hernandez as a 2-1 favorite, minus 200, which I think is
minus 180 here for me. But
damn, yeah. Similar. That's crazy, though. I thought it would be a lot closer. I thought they'd have him at, like, minus 150, if anything.
There's still time.
I thought it would be, like, even, but interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, yeah, so we're siding with the grappler in Hernandez's case. The Tapology votes have Kopylov, but we'll see how it goes, man.
Sweet, dude. This fight I'm excited for.
Which one's that?
The next one, the prelim main event.
I wonder why you're excited for it, because of the tight shorts, or are we...
Nah, dude, we're huge fans of these girls over here, man.
Yeah, Lemos and Dern have both had really exciting fights in the UFC. I don't know if this is such a great fight, though, for Mackenzie Dern. After coming off again and beat up by Jessica Andrade, she's fighting the other power puncher in the division, in Amanda Lemos.
I don't know. She's all over the map, man. Sometimes she fights really good. After going through a divorce, then when things are all good, she gets knocked out. It's entertaining.
Yeah. So who you got in this one, Jordan?
I got Lemos. I think she's going to continue to rise. I do think that Mackenzie Dern probably going to get knocked out again.
Yeah. Bloodsport.
I got my girl on this one, Mackenzie. I love her, and completely unbiased now. I mean, No, but she looks much better in real life if you meet her, trust me. When I'm at Lemos in Brazil, she was really weird. She was very shy. Like, she was just there like this. But anyway, she's 36 years old, Amanda Lemos. She just got absolutely smothered by Zhang Weili. Like, what Zhang Weili did to her on the ground was criminal. Should be prison for that. She turns 37 this year, Amanda Lemos does. She trains in a very small gym in Brazil, which can be good, but I'm never a fan of that. If it's too small, it looks like it's one small... Like, it's as big as my room in here, which is not big at all. Mm-hmm. Mackenzie has phenomenal takedowns. Her new boyfriend is MMA fighter as well. Her old boyfriend was like, I think, a volleyball player or something like
that. Yeah, something like that. Soccer player or surfer. Yeah.
So the dates maybe happen in the gym now. And she trained with Hayden, he has fight ready and stuff like that. And really got into the wrestling more, focused on wrestling more. Because once she gets Lemos on the ground, Lemos will not get up. That's my opinion. Even though Lemos has submission wins as well, Mackenzie's so good on top. And this could be understood a little bit wrong as well, but don't talk about the MMA terms good on top. But I just have a feeling it's definitely with a little bit of bias that Mackenzie Dern will, I say decision. It's a 3-round fight, some clinching, wrestling, not trying not to get hit. And just getting a not too impressive victory.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Mackenzie win here. I think she has the higher ceiling right now at this stage of their careers. Like you said, Lemos is 36 and coming off of that dog walk against Zhang Weili where she got beat, you know, pillar to post. We gave that biggest ass whooping of the year in our end of the year awards show. And, you know, it was well deserved. But, you know, that being said,
the biggest ass was whooping. Oh, that would be Mackenzie Dern.
No, yeah, exactly. got it mixed up there, yeah.
That's going to be this weekend, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think Dern can get it done if she gets on top. Like you said, I don't think Lemos is getting off. She got submitted against Jessica Andrade, but that was really more like catch you out of position with that standing arm triangle. It was like
standing arm triangle.
Yeah, it was like some hitman shit. I've never seen anything like that in an MMA fight before. It was awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lemos, she does hit really hard, and she has pretty good takedown defense. And Dern is not really the best takedown artist. She's good on the ground, but, you know, she tends to find it in, like, hip throws or, like, when the other girl shoots on her. Or she could pull guard, too. So, I mean, I think it might be a tough fight on the feet for Dern. But if she can get to the ground on a scramble, I could see her winning the round or getting a submission at some point. But I don't know, man. It's hard for me to pick her
for a second.
In the spot because I feel like we said, Lemos does have very good takedown defense. I always think of Lemos as like the female Davison Figueiredo.
Definitely a lot of trouble for Lemos.
Man, I lost the fucking connection again. They can also tire
you
out a lot
if you're Lemos.
Every goddamn 30 minutes.
You are a striker and a grappler just smothers you on the ground. That can be very tiring. It definitely affects you.
Let me ask you, while we're waiting on who's to get back on, who do you think is going to win between Weili and Jan?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, I think Weili is going to absolutely maul her. I think Weili is the best female fighter we've ever seen. I know Amanda Nunes. I know Valentina Shevchenko. But I do believe skill for skill, no one is better than Weili because Nunes was just a heavy freaking Hulk.
Yeah.
Where I'm still not sure if she shouldn't fight in the man's weight class. I mean, she was a monster. 145 was non-existent. She was never a double champ for me. I might be a little bit of a hater here, but I just believe skill for skill, Weili can beat everyone everywhere. She's like Volkanovski for me of the females, so.
Yeah, but with more power, you know, more power and more explosiveness.
If she's able to absolutely, like you were saying, just dog walk Yan, then I would definitely put her up there as the female goat. But I think Yan might have something for her. I'd like to see. I'm a big fan of Yan Shao Ning. Yeah, I am too.
That's on UFC 300, right?
Hell yeah, it is.
That's awesome that they got that spot. But yeah, so I'm going to go with Lemos after some going back and forth. I think the takedown defense, I think the power on the feet. I want Mackenzie to win, but I think for her to win, she's going to have to find the grappling, and it might not be that easy in a big cage with the wrestling acumen of Amanda Lemos. She might be tough. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'll be happy to eat crow because I want Dern to win. I want her to keep rising through the ranks. And she's never lost two fights in a row, so maybe it's something for her that when she loses a fight, she comes back and, you know, gives them hell in the training room. So, I don't know. I'd like to see her win, but I think it's going to be a tough matchup. But, yeah. All right, going down the card, we got a couple sloppy heavyweights here. We got Marcos Rogerio de Lima versus Justin Taffa. This fight, for me, is pretty cut and dry. Justin Taffa can't wrestle. Marcos Rogerio de Lima can. So I'm going to go with Marcos Rogerio here. What do you guys think?
I concur.
I mean, technically, you're right. Taffa's takedown defense is horrible. But the thing is, Taffa is just a guy. He doesn't need a lot of time. Yeah. He doesn't need you to even come to him and even touch you. He just, his reach is not that long, but it somehow, somehow makes it very useful. And he will just beat you with everything he has from the bell. And yeah. I don't like that Marcos Rogerio de Lima is coming off that big of a knockout loss. I mean, he said himself he reconsidered if he wants to continue fighting because he, I think, lost a lot of teeth in the fight and couldn't eat for weeks, had to eat through a straw. I mean, that was scary to hear.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Probably broke his jaw or whatever. Yeah. And recovering from that, he's 38 years old, Taffa is 30. I just think he's a little bit gun-shy maybe. After a flying knee and a little bit hesitant to just engage in the grappling because of the uppercuts and stuff. And I think Taffa, and I hope as well Taffa gets him out of there.
I think, you know, you kind of convinced me there. I'm not going to lie. I didn't even, I forgot about that whole aftermath after the Derek Lewis knockout. And, you know, in my mind, my initial reaction was like, of course he gets knocked out by Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis knocks out everybody, right? Like, you know, you can't take too much out of him for that. But you're right. That was a pretty devastating one. And,
six months ago, that's,
was it really only 6 months ago? Wow. All
six right. months, 1 week. That's not that long. If you had to drink to a straw.
Yeah. For that's not long at all. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you might've got me there. I'm just going to play it safe. I'm going to say that the fight doesn't go the distance or maybe even goes under 1.5. Cause I think if Taffa gets the knockout, it will be early. I think if Rogerio gets a finish, it will also be early. He'll be able to take him down and gets an arm triangle or something. But if he can't get the takedown or if he gets touched up before that, I expect Taffa to get him out of there early. Taffa's knocked out people in one punch before, you know, Parker Porter off the top of my head. I'm sure other guys on his record, Austin Lane. Yeah. So, you know, Taffa could definitely get him out of there early or he could get submitted. We'll see. But either way, that should be a pretty fun fight. Hopefully it doesn't drag out for 3 rounds and we get, you know, a sloppy heavyweight affair like we're used to. Then you got Rinya Nakamura versus Carlos Vera. Nakamura is that standout Japanese wrestler. We've seen him a few times already. Came off the road to UFC. I expect him to keep his winning ways here. Carlos Vera is a tough customer, though, and Nakamura in his last fight showed that he's not afraid to go to decision if he has to. So I'm going to go with Nakamura by decision here. I think he'll get it done, and the fight will drag out a little bit longer.
I want to see him get it done. I do think he will get it done, but I want to see him be a little bit more active from the top position, especially once he gets those takedowns. I do remember being extremely frustrated in his last fight with that, where there's a lot of positions where, and I get he didn't want to sacrifice the position, but it's like you could drop an elbow or two, or you could really start softening him up to, I don't know, try to get to that finish. I'm hoping to see a little bit more active activist from Rinya in the ground and pound department. But I think this kind of even goes back. I didn't want to tangent out too much prior, but we kind of built on this. A lot of those Olympic wrestlers are that do like freestyle and Greco. They're used to like just sitting there and taking down. And I think you don't see a lot of ground and pound because after you get the takedown in international style wrestling, after 5 or 10 seconds, if no one can turn, you go back to your feet. With a lot of folk style wrestling and very similar to the Dagestani type of wrestling, the Sambo type of wrestling, once you take somebody down, you're still actively trying to hold them or get them to their back or
scramble.
Actively work to like submit them. So I think that is a huge difference we can see with a lot of international wrestlers. There's another one that I can't remember his name. It's a Swedish Olympic silver medalist that he just retired. But I always
Danish
would
guy you're talking about, right?
Danish dad, yeah, that's
Marco
who it was.
Madsen.
Yeah, we saw him retire, and you could see that he had wrestling prowess, but he would go up against guys that got, like, sixth at state in the United States, and then they would get out, you know, out positioned in the in the wrestling exchanges. So
it's a great point.
I really want to see him develop that. I think if he develops that, he's going to be a very, very big problem. If not, I think we could find him being very susceptible to a dangerous BJJ expert.
Yeah. Fair is pretty good on the ground, but I wouldn't put him up to the caliber and grappling as Renya. He's a good striker though. But either way, he is very tough, and I think he's going to fight in every position. So I think it's more likely that we see Renya get a decision victory than a finish here. But you know, I'd love to see him smoke him and really make a namesake here. Yeah, do you have a pick in this one, Bloodsport?
Of course. I mean, I have to say, if you're a betting guy, you put money on Vera. He's +540. Nakamura's -850. That is bone nickel numbers.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. But I have to say, I mean, Carlos Vera was on the Ultimate Fighter, McGregor versus Chandler season, and he did not impress me. I mean, he has good striking and stuff, but he just did not really impress me. And I have a feeling, that's just a conspiracy theory, that he only got a shot in the UFC because he was on Conor's team, and Conor has the pull to bring everyone to the UFC. And I think he even trains at SBG now, or at least went down there to train a little bit. And the UFC probably just said, okay, yeah, we'll give him a fight. And then they were just like, we're going to put you against a guy who's going to smoke you so we can get you out of there again. He's 36 years old. What's his name? Nakamura is 28 years old. 8-0. Vera's 11-3, also good record. But I do believe that Renya will catch him with a hook, or just a heavy punch while Vera is waiting for the famous wrestling of Renya, and he will put him out cold, I believe.
I would love to see a knockout from him. That would be very, very reassuring to his
team. I mean, he's got a couple.
He has a lot of knockouts.
Yeah, I'd love to see a knockout from him on this one. Or at least like a finish from ground and pound.
It's a good call. Well, Bloodsport, Vera hasn't really fought this level of competition either, and they might just be signing him as cannon fodder here. But yeah, Renya, we might be looking at like a Val Woodburn type situation, right, with Bo Nickel, where you're worried about the grappling, and then boom, here comes this wild overhand, just you know, catches you. We'll see, but yeah, I think we all expect Renya to get it done here. I'm gonna be honest, 96%
of the Polish community does the same, so
that makes sense to me. Yeah. I'm not too familiar with this next fight, Zhang Minyang versus Brenson Ribeiro. Do you guys have any insight on these dudes?
I
just know Ribeiro was coming from the Contender Series this year, and I just remember he got a very crazy, like, he has a very aggressive style and got a very nice knockout there, but I couldn't give you a full, amazing breakdown now. Both are finishers. They either get knocked out or they knock out. I think, in the last five fights, none of them has gone to the decision.
All right. So it should be exciting either way.
Yeah, I believe Ribeiro will just do it as in the Contender Series and just come out swinging. Minyang will do the same, and we fans will get our money's value.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
It will be fun.
I am excited for this next one, Josh Quinlan versus Danny Barlow. I'm a big fan of Josh Quinlan. I see him getting a lot of hate on the Reddits and the forums and stuff, because I think he might have popped for Osterine or something. But you know, whatever, it is what it is, man. They're all on juice, they're on steroids, you know,
like we don't do USADA anymore anyway, so
yeah, good point. So we might be seeing a very juicy Quinlan in there, you know.
We have a new organization though, Drug-Free Sport, it's called.
I thought it was like a UFC ran organization though.
No, it's independent, and they test as well. Like, I think the reports have been submitted in January. Who has been tested? How much? McGregor, I think, has submitted two samples and stuff. Did they do tests?
That's ridiculous. We here at TKO believe that steroids should be mandatory. I want to see people getting knocked out in 30 seconds every single fight.
Don't tell that to Bisping. To Bisping.
Yeah.
He can do it too.
I love a clean sport, but I mean, either way, this fight is pretty interesting. I think, you know, Quinlan has great power in his hands, a little bit stiff on the feet in some aspects, but he does have a very nice left hook. He's fighting Danny Barlow, who is pretty well hyped for, you know, making his UFC debut, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't seen him in the UFC if he did fight here.
He's been a Contender Series this year.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, making his debut, but has a good bit of hype on him, has a lot of first-round knockouts. Josh Quinlan has been shown to be pretty tough to put away. In his last fight, he lost against Trey Waters. He kind of just got out-slicked in that fight. Waters was able to stay on the outside and, you know, piece him up there. I just, you know, I don't see that kind of elusiveness from Danny Barlow. I think it's going to be more of a dogfight, and I like Quinlan's chin, and I think he'll be able to get it done, probably find a knockout shot there. Either way, I expect this fight to be a barn burner, and I think either one of them can get knocked out, so I'm going to side with the underdog and the guy who I've seen more of in Josh Quinlan. You guys got a pick for this one?
I mean, in my opinion, it's just always important to look at, yeah, he's 7-0. Who did he fight?
Yeah.
And I can give you a brief little number game here. Like, yeah, the win he had on Contender Series, as far as I remember, they were both just swinging from the get-go, and just he landed first.
Yeah.
As far as I remember, don't quote me on that. The fight before, he fought a guy who was 2-1. Fight before, he fought a guy who was 5-5. Fight before, he fought a guy who was 1-0. And the fight before, he fought a guy who was 2-6. I mean, that's a boxing type of record, like a padded record. It just doesn't impress me. And he might have knockout power. He finished everyone, yes. But Quinlan has more experience, even though they have the same amount of fights. He fought tougher competition, and I think he can dog it out and win a decision.
Yeah. Jordan, you got to pick.
Even though 82% go with Barlow, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think, you know, they've just seen that Contender Series fight.
They see the knockout streak, and they see all the numbers, and they see the O, and it just feels safer to bet on someone that's undefeated. You know, that's all it is.
I'll happily take the underdog spot.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a smart money. I think even if you kind of like are on the fence of it, that one's just a better one to go for the underdog.
Yeah. Then we got Val Woodburn. Oh, Val Woodburn's back.
Coming back.
Yeah.
I like this guy.
Yeah, I like him too, man. He had a good energy in that fight leading up. And you know, when people come in on short notice like that and fight a super scary dude like Bo Nickel, UFC gives him a bone and gives him another fight.
To me, if you came to me and told me that I got to fight Bo Nickel within like a week or so, I'd be like, you do know that you need to pay me something on the back end of it, right?
Yeah,
like, less than a week. It was during fight week.
Wasn't it
them battered episodes when Nickel's in the PI and they get the call?
Yeah, where's my six-figure contract for that?
Who was Nickel supposed to fight? No, not Jimmy Pickett. He fought him already. He was supposed to fight. I have his face in front of me.
Trayshawn Gore.
That's what it was.
The guy with the crazy submission win from The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, he just pulled out of his next fight too, Trayshawn. He was supposed to fight AJ Dobson. I'm excited to see what Val Woodburn can, you know, show us against Oban Elliott. I'm not too familiar with Oban Elliott. Let me do some quick research. He's a Welshman.
I want Val Woodburn to win.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be cool, man. I mean, I like when these guys get another chance and they do well with it. So this guy, Elliott.
Cage Warriors.
Yeah, he fought in Cage Warriors. He has a lot of decisions on his record, it looks like, and he won a majority decision on the Contender Series. So maybe not the highest level of competition. It's probably good to have him fighting Val Woodburn then. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm going to ride with my boy. We'll see.
Yeah, well, let's go. Tennessee strong, baby.
Yeah. but I'll tell you what. I am very excited for this opener here, women's flyweight fight, Andrea Lee versus Miranda Maverick.
You are hyped for this fight.
I am.
I'm probably going to cook a steak during this fight or something. Like, I don't know.
I get that. You know, first fight of the night, it might not be too warmed up. But we've been a fan of Miranda Maverick on the show for, you know, a few years now. And she's, you know, she came in the UFC and she looked like top prospect. She was great on the ground and seemed to have pretty decent striking. She has kind of fallen back a couple steps, I feel, with her, you know, willingness to engage majorly, and kind of falls into that Jack Hermanson spell where if she can't mix in every part of her game, no one part is strong enough for her to win the fight alone. You know, she kind of has to have the wrestling in order for her hands to work. And if she just ends up on the feet, we've seen her get pretty much beat up on the feet. And in the case against Jasmine Jadrovicius, she got out scrambled on the ground and was not able to have any success after that. So if you're siding on Maverick's side here, you think if she gets a takedown, awesome. If she doesn't, she might be fucked. She's fighting Andrea Lee, who's really good on the feet. Reminds me of Cowboy Cerrone in the sense that she stays on the outside, throws a lot of leg kicks, a lot of head kicks, very dexterous on her with her kicks, uses them like punches. And, you know, she'll find a knockout if you give it to her, but she's more than happy to just, you know, stay on the outside and pepper you with combinations and jabs and things like that. And I expect her to have some good success here against Maverick. If Maverick can't get the takedown, I think she's at a big loss on the feet. She's a much smaller fighter, and Andrea loses or uses her her range very well. So I like Andrea Lee in the underdog spot here. I think they have her at like plus 150 right now, and I think those are good odds to come back on. So I'm going with Lee here. Maverick could get it done by a smothering performance, a very boring smothering performance, but I expect Lee to be a little bit more hungry in some positions and land strikes, maybe even win a round after getting taken down like two, three minutes and like having some good strikes on the feet that the judges are like, well, Maverick didn't do anything with the top control. So, you know, we have to give it to the damage fighter. What do you guys think? You guys have an opinion on this one?
I have a pretty strong opinion. I have to say, in my opinion, Andrea Lee absolutely sucks. I think they are just looking for her to get another loss to then cut her. I mean, if she loses this, she's 13-9. I mean, that's Angela Hill level of journey woman.
Yeah.
I have a rule that I never bet on women's fights because you just never know with them what they do. But in this one, I think minus 205 is what it shows for me here for Maverick. Is a great odds for her because Andrea Lee has not zero takedown defense, but I'm really not impressed by her takedown defense. Maverick will just smother her. She's 26 years old. She gets better and better and better, whilst Andrea Lee is just like her husband, gets worse and worse and worse. I don't know if you know who her husband is. Like, he's a pretty controversial guy.
Yes. She can
did he get cut?
Yeah. Well, the first
Tony
guy.
Tony Kelly or something. What
was
his
name? Tony Kelly, I think his name was. But the first guy she dated was like a Nazi. He had like a swastika tattoo. And then
Tony Kelly's not far from that, I tell you this much.
So you're saying she's got a type. Yeah. Maybe that's why she reminds me of Cowboy.
I'm pretty much. Yeah, she likes cowboy hat as well. She does.
Yeah.
She's a cool. I when I met her in London, she's a sweetheart if you meet her, but she's just so weird and her fighting does really not impress me too much. She has good striking as you said, but she just can't mix it together.
Yeah.
And Maverick will just run like a train through her. I believe, and this is a very risky thing to say, I know, but I think she's gonna dominate her for 3 rounds.
I agree. I think this is just a nice little win for Miranda Maverick.
We'll see.
For you, the Maverick.
I'll be happy to be wrong. I like Maverick, you know. I just think I feel like Lee might have – well, she does. She has more tools on the feet, and I think that might play into the factor here. But, all right, let's wrap this up. We'll go down the betting slip. You don't have to bet on every fight if you don't want to, you know. But if you were going to be a betting man, which fights would you be most confident in? Jordan, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I go with mine. I got much to y'all have almost swayed me, but I do think that Volkanovski is still going to get it done, and he is going to move on from the featherweight division with a win over Ilya Topuria. I'm going to pick that money line, but I would say that if he's going to win by any method, it would be a decision win because Ilya will come ready for that one. I think Robert Whittaker gets it done over Paulo Costa. I think Jeff Neal gets it done over Ian Garry. Though, like you were saying, I think Ian Garry will come back better from a loss after this, but I do not think he's ready for it right now. So I'll take Jeff Neal money line. I got Merab getting it done against Cejudo in a decision. And I got Anthony Hernandez getting it done against... Actually, I'm going to stay out of that one. I'm going to watch that one. I like Anthony Hernandez in that one, but I don't feel super confident in that one. I got Lamos getting it done over Mackenzie Dern. And I got Rinya Nakamura getting it done. I'm going to go Moneyline. I'd like to see a little bit more from him to for me to start betting on some more finishes, but I think he's going to get it done as well. That's probably what I'm going to wrap it up in.
Sounds good. Bloodsport, who you got on this card?
If you go for betting, I like to go with good odds as well. I'm not a guy who bets on a minus 850 guy or something. I think Quindon is quite an interesting bet. Plus 155, slight underdog with experience. He can really get it done. I would bet that Tafa gets it done inside the distance. He's an underdog, and inside the distance is a nice little add-up because he will not win the decision anyways. And I also do believe that Anthony Hernandez inside the distance is a quite good bet, and I would bet that Merab gets it done full time. Like, just the fight will end after 3 rounds by decision, and Merab gets it done.
Sounds good to me. I like those picks. You're not going to put it on Topuria?
No. Like, I have to say, I was a big betting guy, and I recently, I think, at the Strickland card, I just stopped betting because I realized that if I bet on fights, I can't really enjoy them that much anymore. because I'm just always normally I'm like the Neil Magny fight killed me financially when he submitted the Mike Malott or same. TKO'd him. I was so mad. I wanted to kill someone, but normally I would be like, oh my god, what a cool upset! Like I love stuff like that.
And I like Neil Magny. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Neil Magny, but I don't hate him at all. I don't hate Malott. I'm not a fan of Malott. So I had no pony in this one, but since I had money on it, it just kills the viewing experience for me a little bit, even though it's fun. But I stopped. I tried to stop at least betting on fights. But Topuria would be a nice little bet, but -110 against the great Volkanovski, the greatest featherweight together with Aldo full time, it's just a tough bet.
Yeah,
Hussein tries to stop betting too, but he can't.
I keep coming back, baby. coming back. Yeah, no, I had a similar experience though with that Mike Malott fight where I was like, damn, like I should be really happy for Neil Magny right now, but I wasn't.
I was furious.
The parlay gets killed. Yeah, you get mad.
It's tough, man. But yeah, so going down the card here though, I got Topuria. I'm gonna go with Topuria. I'm gonna go with Whitaker by decision. If he gets it done, I think he gets it done by decision. I'm going to stay away from the Ian Garry fight, but I do side with him. I'm going to go Merab by decision. Gross. I'm pretty confident in that. and then I like Fluffy round three or by decision. I think he'll probably drag. I think either way, this fight goes to the third round. And I think when it gets there, Fluffy might be able to find that submission. If he's fighting a wrestling heavy game plan going up to that round, I think he can get that done there. And then for the prelims, I'm going to go with, I don't want to put the Lemos or Dern fight on the betting slip, but I am going to go with, the Rogerio de Lima fight to not start round two. I think this fight gets done in round one on either side. I think that's why they put it there. I think it's going to be exciting. And then I like Josh Quinlan and Andrea Lee on prelim spots, on underdog spots in the prelims. So altogether, I got Topuria, I got Whitaker, I got Merab, Fluffy, round three or decision. We're going to go fight to end in round one in the Taffa fight, and then Quinlan and Lee money line. I'm pretty excited for this fight, or this fight card. There's a lot of dope shit on here. Thank you so much, Bloodsport, for coming on, man. It's been a real pleasure talking.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that as well a lot. It was really nice talking to you guys. Really nice insights and nice little breakdowns.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah. And we're going to enjoy these fights on Saturday, man. I'm excited to see your thoughts after the fight. And, you know, maybe we'll get you back on here because this was a great time. So I appreciate you pulling up. And thank you very much, TKO Nation, as always, for watching. You know, hopefully we'll be back in the winning column this week. You know, we had a rough go last week. Joe Piper stole my money. But we'll see how it goes this one. All right. Thank you guys so much, though. Take it easy, y'all. Appreciate you.
You guys. Have a good one. Bye-bye.